Blog Talk Radio.
I release all disappointment from my mental, physical, spiritual, and emotional body. 'Cause I know that spirit guides me, and love lives inside me. That's why today I take life as it comes.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome again to Higher Consciousness. As always, I am so honored to have this opportunity to connect with you this evening. My name is Professor Jamila Franklin, and I am the host and creator of the show Higher Consciousness. Currently, I teach psychology at colleges, and I have a private counseling practice. I am a certified Reiki master, energy medicine practitioner, and certified metaphysician, author, life coach, and aromatherapist in the greater Atlanta, Georgia area, more specifically Stone Mountain, Georgia. And every week I state the reason for my show for the new listeners. I wanted to create a forum for discussions about metaphysics, about spirituality, holistic psychotherapy, holistic health, holistic nutrition, divine relationships, the law of attraction, and I also wanted to discuss divine prosperity and universal laws. And as I am discussing tonight, I also wanted to talk about some cultural events as well, or which are historical markers for us to acknowledge and to honor. And on some of my shows, as is the case with tonight's show, we will have guests who will cover these topics and more. Higher Consciousness is a two-hour show that will allow listeners to delve into topics at a higher vibrational level. The only ground rule is that everyone gives respect when expressing opinions. And this rule automatically raises your vibrational level so that you can receive respect as well. So, without further delay, I want to talk about tonight's topic. Tonight's topic is Celebration of Black History Month, Part 1. I'm devoting 3 shows to Black History Month because Black History Month is the month of February. If you want to join in the discussion, please call 1-818-572-8023 and press 1. Again, the call-in number is 1-818-572-8023, and you press 1. Tonight, we have 2 dynamic women who are going to join us who have done phenomenal work, and I wanted to introduce them to you later on. One is coming on, at 7:30, and the other is coming on at 8. Internet users, or for those of you who are on the line and you would like to join us via the internet, you just type in http://tobtr.com/s/43438317. Again, you would type in http://tobtr.com/s/43438317. Internet users, you will still have to call 1-818-572-8023 and press 1 if you would like to join the discussion. And only one caller at a time. Again, this is Professor Jamila Franklin, and the show is called Higher Consciousness. And my purpose for the show is to connect you on a heart-to-heart and soul-to-soul level. This is not a show for intellectual debates, nor is it a talk show. Instead, this show is dedicated to those who truly want to learn and grow spiritually and to heal. Last week, we had 16 listeners who listened via their computers. We had 15 people on the board, live callers. We had 798 downloads, which means over 798 people have downloaded last week's show alone. I am so very thankful, as I always say to each of my listeners, to you. Since I began my show October 22nd, 2012, we have had 13,559 listens, which includes the live calls. So 13,559 listens have occurred. And this is only 3.5 months, which is really outstanding, and I really thank you so very much. Also, remember, if you can't join us live, just go to the website and you can hear all of the shows which are archived. Now, even though we may live a divine life, know who we are, and know about the I Am presence within us, we sometimes still experience fear, which causes us to remain in the matrix due to not understanding the law of attraction. We talked about the Mayan prophecy almost 2 months ago with my wonderful guest and Reiki master, Kaya Aman. And most people have experienced a shift in their consciousness and in their energy field and in their bodies since December the 21st, which was the last day of the Mayan calendar. And so with this having been said, everything that we do, remember, any thought that you have, any words that you speak with passion, those things are going to become your reality. You are now more in control of your reality than before, because the vibration of love is now on the planet rather than fear, which had caused people to remain in the matrix for centuries. The matrix is controlled, fear-based thinking. That is no longer your reality. So if you want to change your job, visualize what you want, make plans to do so, and the universe will support you in that effort. If you want to change your relationship, put that out to the universe, to God, to Allah, to Jehovah, whatever name you give that being outside of yourself, and you can have it happen in a record amount of time. As Reverend Joel Osteen has said, recently, there's a shift. He's acknowledging the Mayan shift on the planet. So all you have to do is ask and believe, and you shall receive it. So, and for those of you who experienced the Reiki healing that I did on the air about 2 weeks ago, I am so appreciative. I've gotten extremely positive feedback about that. And if you would like to learn more about Reiki and have it continue to permanently transform your life on the mental, emotional, physical, and financial levels, please contact me at 770-808-8051. Again, my contact number is 770-808-8051 if you want more information about Reiki and to attend a class. Now, tonight's topic, again, is Celebration of Black History Month, Part 1. And if you want to join in the discussion, I'm bringing on a first guest at 7:30. You may call 1-818-572-8023 and press 1. For the next three shows, the focus will be on the wonderful contributions and talents of African Americans since February is Black History Month. And Black History Month began as a week and later expanded into a month. The late, great Dr. Carter G. Woodson, academic scholar and Harvard University graduate, was the founder of this historic event. February was designated as the month for Black History Week by Dr. Carter G. Woodson in 1926 because February was the month that both Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln were born. And in 1976, the week expanded into 1 month. And on February the 18th, Higher Consciousness will be devoted exclusively to this great African-American historian and scholar. So be sure to join us to learn more about Dr. Woodson's outstanding accomplishments and achievements. Tonight's show, as I mentioned earlier, will highlight the extraordinary accomplishments of two phenomenal African-American women. One will join us at 7:30, and the second one will join us at 8 p.m. And the first guest who will join us at 7:30 is Ms. Kim Green. And I will give you more information when I bring her on about her wonderful gifts. And Ms. Green is a talented and gifted author. The second guest who is joining us at 8 p.m. is Ms. Jacqueline Clay Chester, an exceptional author, actor, playwright, jeweler, and model. Now, we know that accomplishments of African Americans extend beyond the month of February. We make contributions throughout the year. So people of all races and ethnicities should be honored and recognized throughout the 12 months of the year. And as a woman of African ancestry born in America, I have always, and let me just repeat that, I have always acknowledged and heralded my heritage since I was a young child growing up in a segregated South in the 50s and 60s. I've always been very, very clean, very, very clear and very proud of my heritage. So Black History Month is symbolic in that it allows everyone of all races and of all ethnicities to pay special homage throughout February to people of African ancestry living in America. And it was Dr. Woodson's vision to bring scholarship to the study of our history and culture, which he brilliantly and skillfully did. Now, today, as I look at some of the shows on television and movies being made about African Americans, some make me proud, whereas others make me angry or sad. The latest movie, Django Unchained, is one such movie which makes a mockery out of the slave experience in America. And I've just found it very interesting that some people really embraced this movie and could not see it as a mockery of the slave experience. Slavery was not comical. It was a Holocaust that no other group experienced to the extent that we did. Other people experienced a Holocaust, but this Holocaust lasted for Africans in America from the 1600s to the mid-1800s in America. And we still see the vestiges of it today. And the slave experience in America was the most heinous and the most cruel out of all of the other countries on the planet. And it lasted longer than any other country. Slavery was outlawed in other countries, but it was retained here until the mid-1860s. So while I appreciate the opinions of those who truly loved the movie, I do not share those opinions. And it's my belief that if our ancestors, Malcolm X, Dr. King, Fannie Lou Hamer, Dr. Woodson, Frederick Douglass, Marcus Garvey, Madam C.J. Walker, W.E.B. Du Bois, Ida Burnett, Dorothy Height, and others, if they were alive and viewed the movie, I believe that they would shed tears to see that some of us find humor in a woman being beaten and her husband being beaten, and to witness a satire about a Holocaust that affected the lives of so many people, not just the Africans who experienced it, but the Caucasians too. You cannot enslave a people and not be affected by it as a slaveholder or as a slave. So that pain is still part of the fabric of America. And that movie did nothing to heal the wounds, but to make a mockery of this experience. And my comments to Mr. Quentin Tarantino are as follows. Quentin, if you would like to chronicle the history of an African people living in America, please base it on facts, not fiction. We have numerous very well-known and lesser well-known heroes whom you could have highlighted and given an accurate and less stereotypic portrayal. Quentin, let us not use stereotypes to defame any group, regardless of race. Let us make movies and shows that depict people of all races from a factual, not fictional, comical perspective. Mr. Tarantino, make a biopic about President Obama, the first African-American president of this country, who has been elected twice by the populace. Make a biopic about Oprah Winfrey and Sheila Johnson, the ex-wife of Bob Johnson, who was the former owner of BET. Both women are African-American and became billionaires in the same year. Very few people know about Sheila Johnson, but she and Oprah stepped into billionaire status at the same time. So research that and make a biopic about those two phenomenal women. Make a biopic about First Lady Michelle Obama, Princeton University and Harvard University, educated and trained. Make one about her triumphs. Quentin, make a biopic about Madam C.J. Walker, the first female millionaire of any race in this country, who became a millionaire in the early 1900s. So, as I said, in 2013, we have a lot to be proud of and a lot that still will give us dismay. And I'm voting for the healing of the wounds of everyone, of every race, of all genders, of all sexual persuasion. I'm voting for this country. I'm voting for the healing that is underway. I'm voting for making movies and television shows and records and CDs that highlight and chronicle the triumphs and the positive aspects of Africans living in America, of Latinos in this country, of Asians, of our Native American brothers and sisters, of our Caucasian brothers and sisters, of everyone from a positive perspective. I'm voting for and asking that we demand to see movies, to see television shows, to see plays, to read books, like the ones that are going to be highlighted this evening by these two phenomenal African-American women, that depict people in a positive light, that promote positive images, that refute and dispel the negative images and lies that are part of the matrix that I mentioned earlier and that I have a show dedicated to. Because it is in the best interest of those who promote racist and stereotypic movies and plays and pictures to keep people in a fog and not thinking. Because if you can show people of any race, African American, Latino, Asian, Native American, Caucasian, if you can show the worst of us and continue to perpetuate that, What happens? We then believe it. I'm a psychotherapist. I have my own clinical practice. I teach psychology, psychologists. Everything in this country has a psychological base. And Django was not a movie that, to me, was not well planned. And I take issue with the stereotypic issues, images within the movie. I take issues with it because at the time that we had reelected a black president for the second time, the movie comes out to show a black man who's defamed and demoralized. And supposedly in the end, he wins because he kills these people. But that's not the way in which you can heal a nation. That's promoting violence. So you solve your problems by beating people and by the barrel of a gun. And we're seeing now an explosion, pardon the pun, of gun violence. So if you want to have a movie that heals, and if you want to have a movie that promotes love, if you want to have books that promote healing, that promote diversity, that promote respect and that acknowledge our differences from a holistic perspective, you as a listening audience will have to demand that. People continue to promote and put out stereotypic, racist, sexist, homophobic, gender negative information. Why? Because the population will go to see it. If you choose to critically review things that you read, that you hear, and that you see, I guarantee you another Django Unchained would never be made. And what has happened now is Quentin Tarantino and a group of people were trying to put out Django Unchained slave dolls. And I'm not sure how far that effort has gone. So the movie, to me, has sinister undertones. When you have the CEO of a country who is bringing healing to a country, who is also African-American, and to bring out a picture that was not fictional of a black man who does not own his own body nor his wife, and has his wife is subjected to beatings and he can't protect her, and he has to kill people in order to do so. To bring that out at the same time we have the CEO of our country as an African-American male, to me, is a subliminal message. So be more critical of things that deal with anyone, regardless of race. I implore you to be more aware and not to use the matrix thinking. Remember, that's controlled thinking. Not to blindly go to movies or read books or go to plays, but to go to those that you believe in. Now, if you believe in those in these images and what they promote, then go right ahead. But when I've brought up some of these subtle issues about Django and some other issues about some other things, people have started to look at it differently. So I implore you, it's not to stop freedom of speech. People can do and write whatever they want. That's not the point that I'm making. But the point that I'm making, if we're saying that we are a nation who wants to heal, we cannot heal with racist stereotypes being perpetuated. We cannot heal with sexist stereotypes being perpetuated. We cannot heal with gender stereotypes being perpetuated. And they can only be perpetuated if the American populace continues to patronize these kinds of movies, plays, and books. So this evening I'm just so very, very honored to have two women who refute those stereotypes, who bring an air of freshness to the topic of race as it relates to African Americans who are uplifting and upholding people and not negating their experiences. So, as I said before, I'm very, very happy that they are going to be our guests this evening. And this is not a show that's dealing with debates about, so we're not getting into debates about Django and all that. That's not the purpose of my making the comment. My making the comment is basically for us to really, really peel away the layers and see what's before us, because as I said, as a professor of psychology, we study everything that's being taught and all the images. And I teach this in my classes. The premise of everything in this country, which is based in our books, and the theory in our books, have stated that too, that everything in this country has a psychological base to it. It's not random. So movies leave us an indelible mark on the brains of people. So people have said, well, I can go to a movie and leave it at the movie house. That's not true. Because if you have the television on at night, and if there's a horror movie on, you will have a nightmare. So the brain, there's nothing that the brain does not absorb, okay, in terms of the frontal cortex. It absorbs every single thing. And when you have hypnosis done, people are able to retrieve things that they thought were forgotten. It does not lose anything. It absorbs everything. So the subliminal messages and the overt messages that we see on television, that we hear on the radio, that we hear through CDs, would dictate people's behavior, their thoughts, their behaviors, and their actions. And so it is my wish, and I know it was a wish of the ancestors whose names I mentioned earlier, that we move forward towards healing, that we move forward towards accepting everyone regardless of race and acknowledging everyone regardless of race for his or her accomplishments, and that we are able to say that we see people as a mirror reflection of ourselves, regardless of race. But we have to start with our home first. We have to love the bodies in which we are currently residing in. So if you're an African living in America, that body should be honored. It should be revered. And it saddens me when I don't see that happening. It saddens me when I see young, beautiful African-American children who desire to be lighter or to have straight features or whatever, because people with straight features are beautiful, but people with beautiful broad noses and full lips are equally as beautiful. So it saddens me when I see images that refute the beauty that I see in the African-American culture. Because, as I said, as a child, I've always loved who I am. I've always felt good about me. So it used to puzzle me when I would see African-American children not loving their bodies and wanting to be something other than who they are. But then, as I became older and studied psychology, I then understood, because of the images. Even now, we have images on television that are black images, but a lot of them are comical. If people are of all hues, we're buffoons on a lot of the television shows. And I'm so proud of Aspire, the network show, because Aspire is the only network where I have not seen us debased and dehumanized. Even though we have black networks now and in different shows, Aspire is the only one, and that was Magic Johnson's intention. He stated that he wanted to provide a network that reflected accurate black life, that was not stereotypic. And so I'm so proud and so honored to be living here at this time, in this moment, to see the second inauguration of an African-American president and to see the strides. And I still have some dismay, but I see a greater future within this country for all people, for all races, for all genders, for all people of sexual perspectives. I just see the growth. And so it is my intention to continue to promote those movies, to promote the artists that I have tonight on my show, to promote those artists who are moving at that level of consciousness. And those who are not, their work should still be put out there. I just will not support it because it is not moving in the area in which I think is promoting healing for all people. So having said that, when I come back, we will have our first guest, Ms. Kim Green, after this commercial break.
This is Professor Jamila Franklin, CEO and President of Oyende Enterprises, a holistic wellness company. We provide dynamic certified Reiki and energy medicine classes and trainings, certified aromatherapy courses, metaphysics courses, life coaching sessions, and private holistic counseling sessions. For more information, call 770-808-8051 or go to our website at www.oyendeenterprises.com. That is spelled OYINDEENTERPRISES.com. We look forward to hearing from you.
Welcome back. This is Professor Jamila Franklin. I am the host and creator of the show Higher Consciousness. And for the next 3 weeks, we will be honoring people of African ancestry on the show because this is Black History Month, and I'm so very honored tonight to have two phenomenal women as my guest. The first guest I'm bringing on is Ms. Kim Green, the ghostwriter for Life is Not a Fairy Tale, which was produced by Touchstone Pictures. And this is the autobiography of the 2004 American Idol winner, Fantasia Farino. And this became a Lifetime television movie, which I saw. The book was listed on both the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal's bestseller list. Kim was also a featured author in the African-American serial novel When Butterflies Kiss, produced by Silver Lion Press. And she was a contributor to Proverbs for the People by Dafina Books. She has worked with legendary members of The Last Poets, a phenomenal group of spoken word artists. Some young people don't know that there were spoken word artists way before the current spoken word artists. And The Last Poets were very famous during the 60s and 70s. So she worked with legendary members of The Last Poets to collaborate on on a mission, selected poems, and a history of The Last Poets. Her debut novel, Hallucination, is exceptional, and it was named an honorable mention in Writer's Digest Self-Published Book Awards, and she was named by Written Magazine as an emerging voice for 2012. And I am going to bring on Kim at this moment. Greetings, Kim. How are you?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, wonderful. It worked. I'm very grateful to be here. Thank you very much for having me on.
I would like for you to give the listening audience more information about you because as I read your information to them, your information is just exceptional, and I'm just so very honored to have you on the show. As my listeners know, I don't use the typical talk show format where people quiz people and whatever. I just let people talk and give their information, and then I have also someone on the line, I think, who wants to ask you a question, and then callers call in to ask questions. So how did you get into writing? Did you start as a when you were very young, and who were your role models? Those are some of the questions that I have.
Well, I've always written. I think it's, I was an only child, and I lived in New York City, and my parents really didn't let me go outside and play, which is an interesting thing when you live in Georgia. That seems so foreign. But I was sort of a loner because I went to a pretty prestigious private school in New York City, and I was always reading. And so we were really reading kids, and we were always reading and writing and trying to get better in at our craft. Even when we were young, you know, writing was a very big emphasis at my school. And so I think that was sort of a hobby of mine, to just stay inside and read books and write things. But I think what inspired my writing in a real way is when my mother passed away unexpectedly when I was 15 years old.
Oh.
And I think that is when I just kind of had to find something to minister to me. And I was just starting to write and get to know myself and get to really deepen my ideas of what had just happened to me and into my life. And I think that is kind of the beginning of this journey of writing. And my novel actually is about a woman whose mother died when she was 15, and how that sparked a sort of metaphysic reaction, because it became manifested into illness in her later life. But I think the shock is what happened to her, and that's what kind of caused the trajectory of her life.
Wow. First of all, I give you my heartfelt condolences, even though it's years later, about your mom's, transition.
Mm-hmm.
And with this show, we deal with metaphysics, and the show that we had last week, we were talking about the near-death experience. And so for most of my listening audience, we know and believe that this is just one phase of the reality, that the spirit never leaves. This is very temporary, and that people never go anywhere. The spirit is always around us. So your mom is very much present in your life, but I'm just so happy that you were able to take that and to deepen your awareness and to write, because it gave you some healing. Now, how? So from that point, then you just started writing short stories?
I was writing short stories. First of all, I was trying to get out of high school, and I remember one of my a really important thing that happened to me as a writer is that I used to, write these, do my homework, write the essays and the things that were required to do. But I remember that I was getting like C's in writing and essays, and I had a very strict English teacher, and everybody was very afraid of her, and she was just a very amazingly vivid character in my mind. I just remember her physicality and everything about her so much. And she was a very slender, slender woman, and she had a long nose, and she sort of looked a little bit like a witch, and that is a real characterization. And she had this dark, dark, dark black hair, but very pale skin. But she was very brilliant, and she loved the written word, and she loved language, and she really taught us about literature. And I remember, I don't know if it was my parents telling me to do this or I came up with it, I can't remember who gets the credit, but I remember going to her and saying, I'm getting C's, but I want to get A's. Like, I really need to understand this. I'm missing something. And she sat down with me, and we talked a lot about the things that I had written, and she really kind of parsed out the crux of writing for me. I mean, she kind of really explained it to me. And from that day on, I kind of said, I'm going to do better. I'm going to make it better, because I knew I wanted to be a writer, but I wasn't doing well. So it was just a terrible problem for me. And I then took her advice very much so, and read more, and I finally started getting A's from her, this very strict woman. And I will tell you a story about that was when I was in high school. And about maybe 10 years ago, I wrote an essay in my school's alumni bulletin, and it was about the adoption of my son. And, you know, minding my own business, this is, you know, 25 years later or something, and I get a letter from her, this woman, this witchy woman. And she wrote me a letter and said, I have to tell you, this essay that you wrote was so beautifully written, and I'm so proud that you wrote it, and it was so well done. And I have to tell you, I was a grown woman, grown with a child, minding my own business, and I sat and cried like a baby
wow.
when I read that. And I think that that is so important because we don't realize how much we're impacted by the people who teach us and
mm-hmm.
lead us.
Yeah.
And she just, the way that she was when I was younger and how afraid I was of her and also very reverent of her, but just really afraid. And for her to look at one piece of my writing a million years later and say that it was well done. And, you know, my school was, you know, that was a very, the private school was like, well done is the term that you want. Well
mm-hmm.
done.
Mm-hmm,
so it was just
mm-hmm.
a very amazing thing for me. And to me, those are the moments where I started to get confidence. And, you know, confidence as a writer never comes really, but we go day by day
mm-hmm.
trying to build it. Because it's such a powerful work that we do as writers, because people get to learn from us and maybe be inspired. And so very much what you were talking about earlier, you know, it's my goal to inspire, and not just topically, but to
mm-hmm.
inspire creativity and just to allow African Americans to be free in their thought process, because I think that that is a concern of mine, at least as an African American person, that we tend to get really bogged down by the rules,
mm-hmm.
whether it's religious rules or moral rules,
mm-hmm.
And then we're just locked up. We're like locked up in our lives. And I think that, you know, even, you know, exercising, you know, that's not for us. You know,
mm-hmm.
When it rains, you know, we can't go outside because we have this straightened hair, so we can't
right.
go out.
And then we'll
know,
go
I mean,
back.
We just,
I go back where? Go
yeah,
back to
we're just
African,
locked
you know?
Up somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And I work hard to write about things that are outside of the box, that were unusual for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that that inspires just some bigger thought.
Well, I'm so impressed with your passion, and the few conversations that we've had, I've been impressed with the little tidbits that I've gotten. So I
mm-hmm.
definitely am so honored that Jacqueline Chester, who is the second guest, recommended that you come on the show, because whatever she recommends is just gold, and I knew that you would be excellent and stellar in all of that. So now, tell us more about Kim Green and how you got to be the ghostwriter for Fantasia's biography and
mm-hmm.
and all of that.
Well, I worked in the music industry.
One second, Kim. Let me just give people
sure.
who are listening the call-in number, because you have a caller on the line now, but I want you to
okay.
get some more information. The call-in number is 1-818-572-8023 and press 1 to speak with my wonderful guest, Ms. Kim Green. Again, the number is 1-818-572-8023, press 1. And the other caller that I see on the line, I will get to you, caller. I'm not ignoring you. I just want to have Ms. Green give us more wonderful information.
The ghostwriting thing happened when I was working in the music industry for many years, and I had written a couple of things and contributed to anthologies and things like that. So I had a lot of experience in writing, and of course a lot of experience with music, and had been working at Sony Music and writing advertising and radio commercials, and, you know, falling deeply in love with music, which is my big powerful passion, is music. And so
do you write
songs? To me,
So you write songs?
It's funny. I don't write songs. And I used to even sing when I was in high school. And I mean, I'm just very, very into music. But I realize that, you know, music has always served as sort of my religion. Mm-hmm. And so I don't. So people say, well, why don't you learn an instrument? And, you know, that is would be very exciting to me. But it's not a place where I want to put my love. You know, my love comes mm-hmm. from loving it. And that's what I want to do. I don't want to be, you know, mad that I have to practice every
mm-hmm.
night. And I love musicians because they're able to do that and they have the discipline to do it. And my discipline is, you know, my ministry, as it were, is writing. So I'd rather stay up all night and write
mm-hmm.
than practice, even though the music is just such a powerful thing for me. But anyway, it came to, so the idea of writing Fantasia's book or the offer came to me, and so I submitted my work. And what I also think is an important part of this story is that they turned me down. So they said no. And well, that was fine. I understood.
Who were the they that turned you down?
The they is the publishing house, Simon & Schuster,
okay.
at the time.
Okay.
And so, which is fair, I understood it because I had no experience in doing it. And so they said no, and I said I got it, and I was done. And then it went through, I guess, Simon & Schuster, did not go through Fantasia or her people at that point. And so when they saw my writing and the samples that I submitted, they were very moved by a piece that I did, one of the last pieces that were ever written about Tupac Shakur, who I interviewed and did a very, very big piece on him in the Source magazine many moons ago. And so they said, you know, we want her, you know, because I guess Simon & Schuster said, oh, we've picked somebody else. We picked somebody for you. And they said, you know, we don't want that. We want this person who wrote this piece about Tupac, because what they liked about my samples was that the way that I was able to capture his voice
mm-hmm.
and his passion. And so I'm always very grateful for that, because it really showed me where my strength was. So as a journalist and as a writer, a novelist, my big gift is listening. And I listen well to people, and I listen as a ghostwriter. It was very important to spend a lot of significant time with Fantasia, and I was listening to her, but not just what she was saying, but I was listening to what she was feeling, and I was
mm-hmm.
listening to her fears, and I was listening to her insecurities, and I was listening on a pretty powerful level, I think. And I'm very proud of the book, and I think that it came out well, and she was very, very happy with it. And I think that's the gift that I try to develop every day, is listening and being able to really intuit what people are feeling, not just what they're saying, because we all know that what people are saying is often not, you know, what we need from them. You know, what we need
exactly.
from them is, like you're saying, the vibration and the spirit of them.
Wow.
So anyway, that's how I got to Fantasia, and that was a very extraordinary experience, because I had to write that book in 2 months, a whole
wow.
thing from start to finish. And I'll never forget it, because I spent many nights sleeping in my clothes and sleeping on my couch, because I didn't want to get too comfortable, because I thought I would miss a deadline or oversleep and miss a conference call. Or it was just really like boot camp for writers. Like, it was the most powerful, difficult, challenging thing I've ever done, but a very big thing. And I, you know, I'm very grateful for that experience. It was wonderful, and Fantasia is a wonderful person. And
mm-hmm.
the question that I am always asked is, do I stay in touch with her? And the answer is no. And I actually wrote a little article about it that was appeared in a writer's, like a blog article, and I was wrote about it, and I said, you know, life happens and people go on, and, you know, people lose touch with their subjects that they're writing about, because,
mm-hmm.
you know, life moves on. So it's not, and I'm not one of those people who are so enthralled with having contact with a celebrity.
Exactly.
Because I worked in the music business for years. So I know celebrities, and I know them when they are regular, and then I know them when they're famous, and then I know when they're getting a 9-to-5 job, you know. Mm-hmm. It goes up and down. Mm-hmm. So people are mm-hmm. people, and that's really important. And I just like to say that because people are excited about the Fantasia thing, but they're most excited, do I know her? And, yes, I have met her, and I do know her, and I love her, by the way. I love her. But our lives went on. You know, we had that experience, and I feel that was a very exciting thing, and I hope I made a dent in her life because I worked with her, I wrote her story. So we have a place in each other's life, but I'm not in touch with her to answer that question.
Well, that is so phenomenal because I saw the Lifetime movie, and mm-hmm. I'm going to ask a practical question that I'm going to bring in the caller. So when you write and it goes to the movies or it was a television movie in this case, do you receive mm-hmm. royalties from that or how does that work?
Well, I think a lot of people would have as a first-time ghostwriter, and because I'm a first-time ghostwriter and this is, you know, I don't want to complain about anything, but the first-time ghostwriter, it was so exciting that I was going to do this project. So mm-hmm. the conversation about making a TV movie never came up. They didn't. I don't think they even foresaw that as a possibility. When mm-hmm. they wanted, you know, when they commissioned this book to be written, they were just really trying to capture the excitement of the album that was about to drop. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's how the music business works. Everything is connected. So it was like an album's coming out. This idea for a book, which is why I had to do the book in only 8 weeks, just mm-hmm. to get it done so it would all drop at the same time, which, you know, it makes sense. That's how the book went so well and sold so many copies and all that, just because it was all connected to the album and the radio is pumping the song every minute. And, it, mm-hmm. you know, that's how the synchronicity of good marketing works, and especially in entertainment, which is why there's crazy deadlines and crazy pressure. But the other thing, so let's just say the book was doing well as it was, then it's like, we got to put this on TV. So that thing happened without my knowledge. You know what I mean? That, to be honest with you, that happened without my knowledge. And I was minding my own business watching TV one day, and it was like, oh, the Fantasia story, Life is Not Fairy Tale, is coming on next week. And I was like, what? So that's kind of how it works. But to answer your very practical question, if I had been a more experienced ghostwriter, and let's say that if I do another project of that proportion, I would get royalties at this point. But that, you know, I was not in the loop enough. And they never talked about that. That was never part of the book. It just came up because the book went so well.
Mm-hmm.
And the music was going so well, and it all just worked so well, so they were like, let's hurry up and make a celebrity right quick. And that's how it just had to be TV, movie, book, all together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things, too, that I think, because I'm a writer as well, and sometimes when we have these wonderful projects, because from what I'm hearing from you is that you're very, very passionate about what you do, and we love the art so much that
it's
the business
the
part of
that
it,
I'm right, exactly.
You know, gets missed. You know,
mm-hmm.
even those people who are recording artists because they really love their craft, and
mm-hmm.
so the other people who are strictly about money, then you know, would cut us out of the loop because
right.
they know that we're not looking at our dotting all the I's and T's because we don't even know that there are I's and T's coming down the road.
Right, exactly.
So for budding writers in the audience, make sure you get an agent and get some other people who can see the business side of what you do, because it's
I'm gonna say something slightly contrary to what you're saying, because I agree with you first of all, but I also know that as a budding artist and a budding writer, but most importantly a budding artist, an artist one who creates, I think to put our passion in what we're doing, even though there is financial gain to be had, and I believe if we do the work and do the art, the money will come.
Right.
And so to me, it's in perfect divine order that I did not get royalties and did not get rich and buy a big mansion, and like none of that was on my schedule.
Mm-hmm.
My schedule was to do a phenomenal project that cemented the idea that I was a good writer,
mm-hmm.
and that I could do more, and
mm-hmm.
and I could do more for myself, including finish my novel that I had been writing for 9 years. So
wow.
those are the things, to me, that was the gift of the Fantasia thing. It cemented me as a writer, as an
mm-hmm.
author who can do it, who can put it all together, put it in a book. And I just, I don't discourage people getting an agent and doing all that stuff. But as a self-published author, at least of my novel, I just know that the power is in the words, and
mm-hmm.
and books last forever. So my book came
mm-hmm.
out yet last year, but people are still talking about it. I'm still being interviewed about it. I'm still doing workshops about it. And so the work lasts longer than even the agent and the fame. And like I said, you know, I have seen people become in regular be on Oprah and then getting a 9-to-5 job. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
it all
mm-hmm.
is a pendulum of how things work. And so for me, not having an agent, but having this experience of having my thing on TV, like, because the movie was verbatim the book. I mean,
wow.
it was word for word. So, you know, I don't feel mad. I don't feel bad because I just know that I wrote that book. And I know
mm-hmm.
that goes farther for me than whether I had gotten an agent and gotten a lot of money and ran out and bought a new car or something ridiculous like that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I just think it was very important to me, divine order, that it happened the way it happened, and the next thing will happen in a different way.
Right.
And I'm
right.
very confident about that. So I agree
right.
with you. Like, please dot your I's and all that,
mm-hmm.
cross your T's. But just focus on what you're doing. Focus on the art and what you're doing, because you're inspiring people in a way that you'll never know. And it's not about the money and the fame.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would come later. That would just come
right.
in time. Yeah, but the primary focus
is
the passion.
If the art is so powerful, it will do what it's supposed to do for you.
Exactly. It's the passion. But I think at the same, what you're saying is so important. I think for a lot of us as African Americans, we have, you know, and this is one of the things I have to credit Michael Jackson for, because a lot of the artists back in the day did not get their royalties for their music because they just wanted to do the work, and
right.
so they died penniless.
There's
what Michael
no right,
did,
exactly.
what Michael did is he bought Little Richard's music. He bought the rights to his music, and I know this to be a fact because I know someone who is an entertainment lawyer who is a very close friend of mine. Michael had invited several people over. You know, they didn't want to come over to break bread with him for whatever reason. And Little Richard talked about this. Michael invited him over to, you know, gave him some. As the story goes, a bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken, and Little Richard was like, well, Michael, why are you inviting me over for a bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken? And in his very unsuspecting, very subdued way, he passed him the rights to all of his music.
Mm-hmm.
So the other people who chose not to come missed out on that. Because
mm-hmm.
he was a businessman. He understood, because as a child, you know, what his father had done, he had been exploited. So he understood that show business, all of it, is a business part to it. And
it is, yes.
He
absolutely.
Looked at that, because it breaks my heart that so many people are sampling black music, and those old artists who are penniless now
mm-hmm.
are not reaping any of the financial gain from that. So is what you're saying is so true. It's so important, because the passion comes first. It's not about the monetary gain. And at the same time, looking over your shoulders, because those lawyers are back there making money off all of this young talent. And it saddens me when I see people who are struggling. And that's what TLC has said years ago. They said,
mm-hmm.
look, don't make the mistake that we made. We didn't know any better. So
right.
I'm telling people, make sure you take, like you did, you self-published your book, and we're going to talk about that, Hallucination, and take charge over your product, because sometimes people are so hungry to get out there
right. mm-hmm.
that they lose rights to everything. And a lot of the older artists did that. People are now making movies using their tracks. They hear the old Temptations movie, you know, songs
yeah.
or whatever. And their families are not reaping the benefits from that. So it's really unfortunate.
The other big problem that I see with African American artists is that they're copycatters to get rich.
Yeah.
And I think that's a bad plan, because if you're not the original and you didn't come up with it and you just are copying it and sounding just like they sound or doing exactly what they do, first of all, it doesn't further the world or the work or the art or anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't do anything for us. It just leaves us stagnant. But most importantly, you know, you don't get the credit of your own style and your own inspiration.
That's true.
Just am such a big fan of thinking out of the box, doing things unusual. And that's really what I tried so hard to do with Hallucination. And my next book is another really outside-the-box thing, but I think it's so important that we start having these discussions about things that are not usual and that's not in the book, you know?
That is so true. What I want to do now is take a commercial break. I was scheduled to bring on Ms. Chester at 8. I see that she's on the line as well. I want to bring her on at 8:15 so we can talk about your novel, Hallucination. And then from 8:15 on to the end of the show, we will have Ms. Chester, and people can ask questions of both ladies. So
a caller? Because I would like to, I mean, I'm sorry.
Yes, I'm going
like
to bring the call in after this commercial break.
Okay, great.
Are you stressed, tired, need to relax? Peace Be Still, a natural, holistic aromatherapy blend is your answer. My name is Jacqueline Scott, and I have been a faithful user for years. For more information and to purchase Peace Be Still, a wonderful blend for the entire family, go to Amazon.com or call 770-808-8051 today.
Greetings. This is Professor Jamila Franklin. This is Higher Consciousness. Do you have a question? Hello? Hello, caller. Do you have a question for Kim Green? Okay.
I guess the caller is not there.
The caller is on the board, but I guess the person pressed 1 by mistake. So can you give us information about your wonderful novel, Hallucination, and then I'll bring in Jacqueline.
Okay. Hallucination is a story. I call it a woman's story, but it's certainly, men have read it and have enjoyed it. It's really about a woman finding herself. And as I mentioned, the character in the book, similar to myself, lost her mother when she was 15. But the book is about sort of the journey, the emotional journey, the inner life of a woman who's overcoming adversity, of first of all the shock of a loss of a mother, but also trying to find herself, and in that finding herself she ends up being diagnosed with lupus. So there's a sort of a physical manifestation of the stress, of the emotional stress.
Mm-hmm.
And then the book talks a lot about choices, the choices that we make, how we make choices, why we make the choices we make, based on what we were told, what our parents said, what school said, and I think that's where we lose ourselves, and then we
mm-hmm.
get sick because everything is clogged up and not really working on a vibrational level.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's how our bodies fail us. So the book is about all that journey stuff that happens. And I think the most important part of the book is that it is a book that something that I envisioned when I was younger and talking about dreaming about writing a book. I always said, I'm going to write a book. And the main objective of the book is not to find a husband. I want the character
mm-hmm.
to not be her concern.
Mm-hmm.
I won't tell you how the book ends.
I think that's important for now because we're coming up on Valentine's Day, and
yes.
some women, really, really feel very hurt if they're not in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a very good point. Yeah.
Yeah. So that is kind of what the book is about. And the other sort of subplot of it is that Lupus is a big character in the book, because the character Morgan, her name is Morgan, has lupus, and I think that has reached out to a lot of people as well. So the book has had success among the lupus community and autoimmune people with autoimmune, because that is mostly women and mostly women of color. Mm-hmm. So that is should be a very, I'm hoping that the book really makes a difference for a lot of people. And all of the talks that I've had and the readings I've done, every time I'm in a room with women, there is never a time that somebody says, oh, I know someone with lupus. I mean, everybody knows somebody with lupus. It's a very treacherous illness out there, and a lot of women have it, and people that they love have it. So it talks a little bit about that and that experience of having this. So it's not medical per se, but it's very much about the inner life of somebody who has this autoimmune illness. And autoimmune illnesses are very interesting, and I think that they're a wonderful metaphorical thing, because it's a thing you have to befriend, because it's not going away. People with autoimmune illnesses, you know, we pray that most of them do not die at the rate that they used to. I mean, there are many people with autoimmune illnesses living a somewhat full life. They're married, they have children, they're raising children, they're, you know, going to college, they're doing all kinds of things. But it's something that you tag along, that's tagging along with you throughout your life. Mm-hmm. And that is powerful. And so to have a character who is, it's like a dual character. It's like Morgan and then Lupus. Like, Lupus goes everywhere she goes. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a scene where she's, you know, on a date, Lupus comes in. Because when you're taking all the autoimmune, the immune-suppressing drugs, you know, dating is different now. You can't kiss somebody just because they're cute. You know, I mean, everything changes. And I think that has been a very important part of the book, and one of the things that I hope that moves people, and a lot of people have called me or told me or emailed me about how the book moved them, because it was so much them seeing themselves. And some of them don't have lupus, some of them have fibromyalgia, or they have something else. But I just think that this inner life of people with these invisible diseases, it's exciting to see yourself and know that you're not alone. And that's kind of what I'm trying to do with the book, is like inspire women and making them feel like they will survive. First of all, they will survive by looking inside, not looking outside, and that they're not alone. Those are my three important points of the book, I think.
That is so wonderful. Well, Kim, give the listening audience your information. How may they contact you?
They can contact me by, well, visiting my website, and I would love for everybody who's listening to look at my website, which is hallucinationthenovel.com. It's a very simple URL, hallucinationthenovel.com.
Okay,
and
spell that for
on the website,
people? Can you spell that for
yes,
for people?
Yes, hallucinationation, hallucination. The novel, thenovel.com.
And no spaces.
And no spaces. And on the website, you will find that there is a place where you can join the Hallucination Nation, which is a little campaign that I'm doing right now. And there are some opportunities to win some prizes. And this is a great opportunity for people who are writers. There's some opportunities to get your manuscript reviewed and critiqued by me. There's also an opportunity to win a piece of original artwork by D. Lammy Hansen, who is the woman who did the cover of my book, and it's a beautiful cover. And she's a very, very talented artist. And then there, my book, Morgan, has a theme song, which is, you can hear it on my website, and the artist Kelly Say, who used to be the lead singer of Incognito, which is a wonderful band, she has donated the song to me for the usage of the book, and it's a theme song, and so there's opportunities to win her full-length album, which is called Pure. So there's prizes, there's fun things to do, but the catch is you have to go on, join Hallucination Nation, and then you are asked to engage with me. So you have to either, you know, read the book, buy the book, write a review of the book, share it with friends on Facebook, share it with on Twitter, and all these things accumulate points. And the people who do the most engagement with me, they will be able to, they'll be eligible for some of these prizes. And so I'm hoping that will, that's sort of a fun interactive way of having the readers engage with me and tell me what they feel about the book and give me their input. And, you know, hopefully the other big prize is that they have the opportunity to appear in my next book, which I'm writing now. They can appear by crafting a character with me, like consult with me, will create a character based on themselves, and then that character will be in my next book. So there are some kind of fun things going on with that, and I would love anybody who's listening or hears about it or knows somebody who's a writer who would like to have their work looked at, to please go on hallucinationthenovel.com, and you'll see where you can join. It says join Hallucination Nation, and that's where you start to be a part of the nation, and you'll be able to earn points by reading the book, buying the book, sharing the book, and you're able to download the first chapter and forward it to your friends, and then they can join Hallucination as well.
Okay.
So anyway, that's something that I'm working on, and I hope that people will at least check out the first chapter, because that will certainly hopefully inspire you to want to read the book in full.
Wonderful. Well, and your telephone number?
Oh, well, my phone number I can't really give you, but you can certainly email me, and if you go on to hallucinationthenovel.com, you'll see all kinds of ways that you can email me. And my email address is kg@hallucinationthenovel.com.
Okay. Well, thank you so
very...
Yeah,
that would be great.
Okay. Well, thank you so very, very, very much, Kim. And please remain on the line with us.
Sure.
And let me just see the person is going to, someone has a question, and I have to bring in the, okay. Greetings. Welcome to Higher Consciousness. Do you have a question? Hello? Okay, same person. Okay, at this moment, I would like to bring our next guest on. The next guest is Ms. Jacqueline Chester, who introduced me to Kim Green, by the way. She's a playwright, author, former high fashion model, jeweler, and actor. The New York fashion industry gave Ms. Chester her first professional modeling job in Moscow, Russia, as a runway model at the American Exhibition in Moscow in the late 1950s. Ms. Chester wrote and performed in a one-woman play about her experiences. She can also be seen in recent commercials and print ads. Her other passion is designing jewelry, and Stuyvesant Avenue Collection is the name of her jewelry company. She designs beautiful pieces. I, as a matter of fact, am the owner of several pieces, and her jewelry is just so beautiful and just very, very stunning. Her current play, A Conversation Between President Barack Obama and Malcolm X, is phenomenal. So what I would like to do at this time is bring on Ms. Chester. Greetings. Greetings.
Hello.
How are
Can you?
You
hear me?
Yes. How are you?
I'm wonderful, wonderful. I've just enjoyed listening to Kim Green. It was very, very entertaining and enlightening as well.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Jacqueline.
Hello, my dear. I want to tell you that I have such respect for you. I really do. I think you're such an organized, creative, talented person. I'm just very pleased to have had the opportunity of meeting you, and of course,
thank
reading
you
Hallucination.
Very much.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. And, of course, you have created that wonderful play that you're going to talk about, and I have tried to bring it to the people as well. So you are
you
very phenomenal as well.
You did a beautiful job of doing that. Yes. Oh, no. That was splendid. As a matter of fact, the actors say that was one of our best, very best venues.
Oh, wonderful. Good.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
great. Good thoughts about that. Yes.
Wonderful.
Well,
yeah.
Welcome to the show, Jacqueline and Chester.
Thank you. I have had
the honor of seeing your play on a number of occasions. When I first saw it, I was just so impressed with it. I saw it at the King Center probably, what, 3 years ago, 4 years ago?
I wrote it in 2009, so yes, going on 4 years, I suppose.
Right, and I was just so impressed with it that I worked on having it come to one of the colleges where I used to teach. So Jacqueline has done phenomenally well with her wonderful play. And I was just so impressed with the fact that you included two of my icons, Malcolm X, as well as President Barack Obama, because a lot of people have written plays about Dr. King, who is just one of our famous and just wonderful icons, but very few people of late have really highlighted Malcolm X, because a lot of people have a lot of stereotypic information about him, which is not
true.
And you brought him to life in such an awesome way. And I'm so thankful to you, because he was my icon when I was growing up. And so I said, well, you have immortalized Malcolm, you know, for a lot of people. So without taking any more of your time, I would like for you to talk about not only your play, but your life is just so wonderful and colorful, because the movie, The Help, was which I didn't see, was an interesting movie. But a lot of people thought that was the only life that a lot of black women had, living the life of a maid. And your life has proven the other, the complete opposite, that we as African-American women are very diverse. But even we
Absolutely.
As people sometimes hold on to those stereotypes, and that's what I was talking about with Django. We hold on to those stereotypes just as much as people who are not African-American, which is really unfortunate. So if you could just bring us up to speed, like Kim did, about your life, and then we can do the segue into the play.
Right. Well, I shared a lot of Kim's story, because I was an only child as well, and used to write from a very early age, and so I could identify with Kim's story. I remember being, I think, maybe in the ninth grade, and Miss Hyman, I'll never forget. There are certain teachers you never forget. And I'll never forget the beautiful, poised, well-put-together Miss Hyman, who happened to be Jewish. But she came up to me one day and she said, you know, you could be a writer if you wanted to. And I looked at her and I probably smiled and I probably thanked her. And I walked away, and I did not follow that lead, because I didn't know how to get started as a writer. I didn't know how writing could put food on the table or pay the rent. So I put the writing on the back burner and did the other things that I love to do, like painting and sculpture at the time. And then, of course, the jewelry followed. I always would dabble in writing, but it wasn't something that I was willing to put out there in front of people. So I kept a lot of my stuff in my desk drawer. I just didn't have any role models. I didn't know how to start, you know, a writing career. And then, of course, the modeling kicked in. I was in college one day, and someone said the liaison secretary wanted to see me, and immediately I was nervous, because I thought, oh, my goodness, my tuition check must have bounced, or I failed a class, you know. So with trembling legs, I went down to see this liaison secretary, and she said, what are you doing this summer? And I said, well, I work in a department store. I've been working there for a couple of years. She said, well, how would you like to go to Moscow?
Mm.
And I didn't say anything because I thought she might have meant Moscow, Idaho. Could it be my luck that someone would want me to hop on a plane and go to Russia? I didn't think so. So as though she was reading in my mind, she said, yes, and I mean Moscow, Russia. And without hesitation, I said, of course, yes. Even though there was a Cold War going on and, you know, the Russians and the Americans were at each other's throats, it was not a concern. I think when you're young, you feel invincible.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever was going to happen was going to happen, but I was going to take this trip to Russia. And so I did. And you know, it just one thing after another happened after that. Came back from Russia, did some modeling jobs. The one that I got from the New York Times magazine section was a plum. I mean, it was just one of those things that the agency I belonged to, when they made the announcement that they were looking for a girl to model for the New York Times fashion section, there was this buzz in the agency, and we all went. We saw Hiro, who was the Japanese photographer, that's H-I-R-O, and he selected me. And so I was just, you know, just blown away. I also did at that time an album cover for a pianist. His name is Red Garland, but I think he was sort of upstaged by Earl Garner, but he was very good as a pianist, but he just didn't have the reputation of an Earl Garner. But anyway, I did the album cover for him and got paid my $25, probably signed away all my rights to that image. And in 2007, a friend of mine wanted to go to Barnes & Noble to buy some jazz tapes and albums, and I went with her, and lo and behold, there was my my album now in a CD.
Wow.
And I was just blown away all these years later, and what was that, 30 years later? There I was on this CD cover.
Wow.
They didn't have to ask for my permission because I evidently had signed it away, you know. So,
that,
but it
that
was nice.
What I was talking about earlier, too. You know,
that's
the right
what I was
to our work. Yeah. And people
absolutely
profiting off our work and making, becoming millionaires off our work. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I tried to find out who, you know, put this out, this CD out, and I even went to a lawyer, but the fact is that I evidently, you know, you have the little release form that you get from your model agency,
mm-hmm.
and you sign it, and that gives them the right to do whatever they want to do with your image. But it was, you know, it was a nice feeling. It wasn't a financially nice feeling, but it was a nice feeling to see.
Right.
You know, this picture, this image had survived and was still current in 2007. And, of course, I married and had three kids, and that, of course, took all of my energies. It was such a wonderful time seeing these three personalities emerge and become young men and young ladies, you know, so... and then I was able, once they graduated from college and found their footing in whatever, you know, professions they had decided for themselves, I was free to concentrate on me again and some of the talents that I wanted to put out there. And so my daughter recommended that I go to a writer's conference that was taking place on St. Simon's, which is off the coast of Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And I signed up for this Writers Conference, and it was there that I wrote my very first play called Second Time. And it won this financial award and whatever, and it was...
Oh, wow.
It was at the Ritz Theater in Brunswick, Georgia, and I thought, wow, that was easy.
Mm-hmm.
but when he told me to take the play back to Atlanta and shop it, S-H-O-P-I-T, it, I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know mm-hmm. how to do that. So nothing happened with the play. I did take it to a few places, and when they didn't turn hoops or, you know, act like it was the greatest thing since, Gone with the Wind or something,
mm-hmm.
I put it away. But I kept writing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wrote several plays in between that, and then I did the play about a conversation between Malcolm X and President Obama, and just like the book that I have published, which is a book of short stories, the dialogue goes on in your head. Once you start to do the project, the dialogue begins to play in your head.
Mm.
And so as you pin one story and then the next and then the next, it is such a gratifying feeling.
Mm.
And when I finished that and published it, I was happy about that. And then I went on to a conversation. And, of course, that was another wonderful experience because the dialogue between these two men was constantly in my brain. I'd go to sleep thinking of what they were going to do next or say mm. next. And I'd wake up in the middle of the night and something had presented itself in my subconscious, and I'd write it down and go back to sleep. And I mean, it was just, it's a lovely, lovely feeling.
Mm.
And so there you are. I was able to believe in it enough to put it out there, and it's been out there since 2009, and there's not been 1 week, or I should say one month or so, that I haven't had it in front of an audience.
That is phenomenal. So you've had runs every single week?
Not every week, but I'm just saying that every month or so I've had it out there somewhere.
Oh, every month. That is
every month
phenomenal.
Or so, yeah. Maybe a church or a school or whatever, but I try to keep it going.
Mm-hmm.
And our next venture will be, the next big one will be at the Southwest Arts Center, March 15th, 16th, and 17th. And I'm hoping that folks will show up there in droves. So I'm excited about that next venture. We will have performances at the Wheat Street Baptist Church on the 16th of February. And then a couple of weeks later, the 26th and 28th at the Georgia Piedmont Technical College. They changed the name, so I had to think about that. But it's Georgia Piedmont Technical College, which used to be DeKalb Technical.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If someone wants to get in touch with you, because I'm going to have you go into details about the play now, first of all, let me just invite people to call if you have any questions for Jacqueline or for Kim. The number is 1-818-572-8023 and press 1. Again, the number is 1-818-572-8023 and press 1. So, if someone wanted to get in touch with you, how would they do that?
Well, my website, I believe, should be up and running hopefully this week, and that is www.brownbagproductions.com. That's
okay.
The website.
So www.brownbagproductions.com?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, Brown Bag Productions. And my phone number is there, too. It's on one of my flyers, 678-427-3882. And if they want to buy tickets to the performance in March at Southwest Arts Center, they can go online to www.eventbrite, that's eventbrite.com.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, tell us basically the premise for the play, and because those are two people that are very much alike. When I saw the play, I said, wow, they have so many similarities. Because I know some people had asked you, why did you not have a conversation between President Obama and Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King? So do you want to share the reasons why you chose those, Malcolm President Barack Obama?
It's amazing how often I've been asked that question. But I found more similarities between President Barack Obama and Malcolm X in their upbringing, their childhood, the fact that by the time both young men were 10, their whole family structure had changed.
Mm-hmm.
So I found that to be very similar, whereas with Martin Luther King and Barack Obama, Martin Luther King fortunately had a lovely childhood. He had a supportive family. They were, for all intents and purposes, middle class.
Mm-hmm.
And his main, friction began in his life when he began with the civil rights movement. But up to that point, he had sort of an idyllic life. So that would be a totally different picture if I combined him with the president. So I thought that Malcolm X was a better candidate to be combined with President Obama. It was amazing, too, that when I wrote the play in 2009, it was the 44th year of Malcolm X's death.
Mm.
And we were having Barack Obama as our 44th president. So I thought that's sort of...
The 44, yeah. Because I'm really into numerology, too, and so I think there are no coincidences with that.
Yes, I believe you're right. I believe so. There are no coincidences. I loved writing it, and I just found that they had similar childhood, maybe Barack's childhood was not as catastrophic as Malcolm X's, but still, when you think of the changes in the family structure, you found a similarity there. And it must have been difficult for both boys to adjust to life without a father, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to pair those two together.
Mm-hmm. And I love the way that you have Malcolm come back to talk.
Yes.
Because some people who are listening may not know. When I was teaching a couple of years ago, they referred to Malcolm as Malcolm 10. That's his sweetheart. It's not Malcolm 10. So,
really?
Yeah. So I no longer assume that people have the information that I have in my head. So could you just give people some information about who Malcolm X is for those people? Because this is internet radio, and people visit from different places all the way around the world. And some people
True.
May not be familiar with who Malcolm X, who he was.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Some people might take the X as a numeral Roman.
Yes, like some people when I was teaching years ago in Boston, I found it interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. right. Yeah. There were reasons why his name went through changes from his original name, which was Malcolm Little, Littlele, and then the play explains how it became Malcolm X. So And, of course, President Obama was able to have his original African name, which Malcolm points out that he would know where to begin to find his original name because all of those things were taken away from African Americans during slavery.
Mm-hmm.
So they took on the name of whoever the owner was of this individual. And so, yeah, it was a difficult time, I think, for African Americans to have to purge themselves of all that they knew in order to come to this new land.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, in the play, Malcolm X does return from the afterlife. And he does so because he never in his entire life would have thought that this country would have elected an African American to the highest office in the land.
Mm-hmm.
So, because he's so creative and so inventive and, you know, whatever, he's just this masterful person, this Malcolm X is, and he devises a way to return to the Earth's atmosphere in order to have this conversation with this newly elected president. And it takes place in the third month of Barack's presidency. So you don't encounter some of the strife that he, went through in his last 4 years. But you know that things are heading in that direction. But at least Malcolm X wants to be there, to congratulate him, and to find out how in the world did this happen, that this country opened itself up to the talents of this African-American male and put him in office. So, I try to cover all of that.
Mm-hmm. You do a wonderful job, too, because for people who have yet to see the play, I was just so impressed with it when I saw it at the King Center. I had no idea as to what to expect. A friend of mine gave me a ticket and said, gave two of us a ticket. Another friend came with me.
I remember you were with someone, yeah.
Yeah, so there were three of us. And
right.
I had no idea what to expect. And this play was just so refreshing. It was just so great because, first of all, like I said, I am a Malcolm baby. I was just so impressed and enthralled with Malcolm when I read about him because he had passed by the time I didn't really know a lot about him as a child because I was raised in the South. And in the South, they really talked about Dr. King more. Malcolm was more of an icon early on in the North and in the Midwest. But when I came to college, in high school I found out about him, and I was Pan-Africanist in my thinking, so anyone who had that kind of philosophy I was drawn to. And Malcolm was just one of the people that I just fell in love with. I just loved the fact that he was able to captivate people's attention, and he was so articulate, and he memorized the dictionary. Everything Malcolm did, I tried to do. I said, I can memorize the dictionary. I could not get through the A's. And I was pretty smart in high school. I said, how do you memorize the entire dictionary? He was just so focused, and I was just so impressed with that. And I was so impressed with his gift, his oratorical skills. And one of my professors at Cornell was one of Malcolm's peers. He knew him well. And I sat at his feet, Dr. James Turner, because I majored in Africana Studies when I was at Cornell. So he would talk about Malcolm. And I was like, oh, my God. And then Betty Shabazz, Malcolm's widow, came to Cornell, and she talked about it. And I was just, anything that had Malcolm's name on it, I was there. You had my rapt attention. And so when he came out with this play, and I saw how well it was done and how it was just, I mean, there were tears welling up in my eyes because we see, for lack of a better word, and that's the issue I have with the Django movie and whatever, we see a lot of chitlin' plays now. You know,
yes.
Mommy hit Daddy over the head with a skillet. All these kind of stupid plays. So
right.
To see something like this, there was a literary production that had people have a real conversation, and the title is so appropriate, a real conversation between the two intelligent, brilliant men, and have them support each other. I said, wow, I was right there with them. I said, it was so real, I could envision the two of them having that conversation. It was not far-reaching at all for me. And for anyone who has seen it, it was not far-reaching. It was just so brilliantly done. So it's an excellent play. I tell everyone, you know, that they should go see the play.
I thank you. That's wonderful. Yeah, for some reason, I feel that it's so important to keep it out there because Malcolm made history and Barack is making history. So
exactly.
I just think it's important for the message of the play to go on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you're doing it in such a great way. And just like how Kim has said that she self-published her book, I know for you, for the most part, that you are personally financing the play yourself.
Yes. 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 And it gets hard.
And so if there are any people out there in the listening audience who would like to go see the play and would like to contribute and donate money to help Jacqueline with this wonderful project, please, please consider doing so. Please do, because there are a lot of people out there in the listening audience who probably would be interested in contributing to something as wonderful as your play. So please consider calling her, seeing the play, and talking with that if that's something that you would like to do, to give back. And you can be of any race. You know, the play it cuts across all races. It's just a wonderful play for everyone to see.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a great. I'm glad you mentioned that. I sometimes forget how expensive it can be to put on a production. You know, especially if you, for instance, if I see a theater and I think, oh my goodness, that would be a great place for a conversation between Malcolm X and President Obama to be performed. And then you go in and you find out that, you know, it costs so much per day and you have to do the lighting and the set design and, you know, it all adds up. And then, of course, you have to do the marketing and, you know, to get people in there and to let people know where it is. And so it can be quite a tall number. And, of course, any help, financial help, would be greatly appreciated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's so many ways in which we can do this. I would like for young entrepreneurs and entertainers, now people who are looking for investments, to start donating dollars, putting them back into worthy plays like yours and productions like yours and things that Kim is also pursuing, because you see people who are putting their monies in things that are good. You know, I think we can do both, but what I admire about people, and I see this happening with us too as well, is that people within other cultures finance and support their own. So,
yes.
And I'm wanting us to do it because you have a lot of young people now who have money. They have disposable income. And when I talk to young people, when I lecture them at the college level, because I've run into some of them who are budding entertainers, I said, look, you can only drive one car at a time. So rather than getting a car that's going to depreciate, getting 15 cars that are going to depreciate, or getting all the bling, because gold is appreciating, but slowly. But most of those things that they purchase would depreciate in value. Invest in something that's going to promote our culture and leave a legacy. So investing in a play like yours would be phenomenal. And we can do creative financing, because I think people now are so push towards investing into things that have temporary value. And your play has lasting value. And I think sometimes people don't do it because they have not been presented with opportunity. So I'm presenting this to anyone who's listening in the listening audience to please get in touch with Jacqueline and to consider donating to her and helping her further her cause, because each time you see the play and each time you see the actors, she's financing this herself. So she could definitely benefit from your assistance. And once you see the play, you will see exactly what I'm talking about in terms of how professionally done it is, how good it just makes you feel. I walked away from the play feeling so empowered, as opposed to having people curse each other out, hit each other over the head, and have a satire made of our experiences. You know, I'm no longer interested in those kinds of things. First of all, I don't go to any of that. But I'm really no longer interested in seeing us promoted financially. I think it should be out there for those people who want to see it. But for the most part, I think we should give most of our dollars to plays that uplift people and make us feel good. And your play does that, as well as Kim's novel. We need to support positive images that are out there.
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah, that is so true. I too get tired of seeing the conflicts between family members, brothers mm-hmm. fighting brothers, and parents at each other's throats. There needs to be a night out when you can sit in the theater and enjoy something and walk away feeling good about what you've just seen, which makes
exactly.
you, in turn, feel good about yourself.
Exactly.
And about your people, you know.
Exactly.
And although people have said to me, well, you know, maybe you should have a little more, you know, Malcolm should get angry and he should, you know, do something or say something to the president and you can have a little action there. I don't want that. You know, I've never wanted that. That is not what the play is about.
And that wasn't part
but,
of who Malcolm is, nor the president. That's not part of their nature.
No, so, not after Malcolm came back from Mecca. This
no.
was a changed man, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he was younger, he was influenced by all of those things that happened when he was a child. And then, of course, he met someone that he adored, and he became the mouthpiece for that person. And he said what they would want him to say. But then when he came back from Mecca, he was a man who was thinking for himself.
Exactly.
And so this is the Malcolm that we meet in the play.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the aim. The aim is to let people leave the theater feeling good about the people that they've just seen, good about themselves, and the possibilities of life in this country getting better and better.
And you know the thing that you did, Jacqueline, that I am so appreciative of? I'm so thankful to you. You have two excellent role models of men who took care of their children.
Mm, yes.
They married
That's
these
the
women,
other similarity.
And
yes,
they took
you're right.
care, and they take, the president is not ashamed of letting everyone know that he's in love with his wife and takes care of his children. The same thing with Malcolm. He had all girls.
Yes.
Just like the president. There's so many similarities
yes.
to everyone. You should see this. Because Malcolm had all girls. The president has
right.
two girls. And they both were in relationships, are in relationships. You know, the president's still in his relationship. They were not womanizers. And
right.
they took care of their children.
Absolutely.
Okay? And that's going against all of these other stereotypes of these chitlin' plays where you see these men running around, and that, for the most part, has been an image that's been perpetuated within the African-American community, unfortunately. And sometimes when they see plays like yours, people will say that's not real because they have been taught and misled with the information in the movie, like it's a Django or whatever. They say, oh, that's real. I said, sweetheart, please. That is not real. There are more men who wanted to be like Malcolm and the president, but it wasn't supported because of racist stereotypes from society that said, you know, you're not supposed to take care of your wife and your children. You're supposed to have multiple relationships. That defines what a black man is. And
well,
so the
president is
redefining that, saying, no, that is not who a black or what a black man is. And the other similarity, because, see, I get on the pulpit with your play, Jacqueline, is that both of them are, Malcolm as well as the president, were willing to say, even though they didn't, neither one of them, and this is what I said to my black males in my college courses in psychology, they didn't have a black father in the house. They both of their fathers died. So you have no excuse now.
Right.
They
exactly.
decided to take charge of their lives and to be fathers for their children, despite the fact that they didn't have a black father in the household. So
mm-hmm.
now there are no excuses. There are no excuses.
No.
Both of these two men
know.
Rose to prominence. So I tell people, mm-hmm. there are no excuses now.
Right. Exactly.
There aren't any excuses.
Exactly. Exactly. No, this, what is it, mama, daddy's baby or whatever. I don't know what terminology they use. Where one man has got three women pregnant with three different kids. I mean, it's just
dreadful.
Absolutely
it's
insane.
Dreadful.
Yeah.
It's
they
very,
are so
very
coming
bad.
Out on Oxygen with that, and we stopped it on the internet with a petition. Oxygen was going to have a show with this rapper, because I don't keep up with rappers and stuff like that, because you know, I'm in a different age group. But this man has 10 children. I think he has 11 children by 10 different women.
That's crazy.
And it was called My Baby's Mama, so something like that. Okay.
Yeah.
So it leaked out to the press, and this young woman was able to start a petition on colorofchange.org, because I'm a member of that group. So she was able to secure hundreds of thousands of signatures, and Oxygen canned the show.
Great.
So can you imagine
Great.
That?
Yeah.
11 children yeah. by 10 different women.
That's awful. Awful.
And that's the image that they're trying to promote with our young black males, to say, this
yes.
is what you should emulate, not the president. This is who you should
mm-hmm.
be like.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Or to make a young man feel ashamed because he wants to be with one woman
exactly.
and to raise his children. You know?
Exactly. Because it's, oh, you're not black enough. And that was the stereotype when the Cosby Show came out, because people try to compare it to Good Times. Like, that was real. I said, Good Times, I don't know anybody who wanted to aspire to be the head of a chicken shack. And that was his claim
right.
to fame. If he did that, it was a temporary stop. But it was not a permanent destination. And when Bill
mm-hmm.
Cosby's show came out, oh, that's not, I said, no, that is more real. Even if
mm-hmm.
people were not a doctor or a lawyer like Claire and Cliff, they aspired to be that. Because people
right.
did not like living in roach-infested, rat-infested environments. Good times. They were not having good times in the housing project. They were struggling and they were surviving. And no one
right.
enjoyed being in those kinds of situations. But those are the kinds of myths that society, and it's not just, it's everybody. Everyone needs to pay attention, because they do it not only to African-Americans, but to women. They have these shows now
right.
on about women fighting and spitting on each other and kicking. I mean, just crazy. It's just crazy.
Disgraceful. Absolutely
very disgraceful.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because whenever people are no longer able to be controlled, you control them through media. Media is a very powerful medium. And I tell people, everything in America is based on psychology. Because I teach it, I understand it, and that's what we see in the research. Everything. There's
right.
nothing in America that's unintentional. It's very focused.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing.
Yeah.
The billboards, everything is very intentional. And people think, oh, Jamila, you're just getting too deep. I said, no, sweetheart, let me tell you. Everything. I'm not talking about some things. I am saying to you, listening audience, every single thing is intentional. Everything. There's a group that has sat down and planned to put that before you. It's not random.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We've had conversations about it. So we, as people of color, people of all races and genders and whatever, we can take our power back by supporting positive images like what Kim is promoting in her book Hallucination, the novel, what Jacqueline is promoting within her play, A Conversation Between President Barack Obama and Malcolm X, with my show, Higher Consciousness. It's not pitting us against each other based on race or sex or whatever, because that's part of the game, too. It's about educating and seeing how this game is played, because as long as we are pitted against each other, the powers to be have nothing to worry about. So we need
that's
to really
true.
Take our power back, because if we don't go to these plays or buy the CDs or look at the TV shows, they won't be produced, because that's how they make their money. The advertisers are not going to put on, they're not going to put their dollars behind a show if nobody's watching it. And when Oxygen
right.
snatched it, that showed people, because the advertisers became nervous. And they said, oh, no, we're not backing this, because the
right.
demographic we thought would watch it is saying they're not going to watch it. And they told,
yeah.
they snatched it before you even hit the airwaves. So we have power. We as
yes.
people within this country, as African Americans, as people of all colors and races and ages and sexual persuasion, whatever whoever you are, you have power. You don't have to sit back idly and let people promote and project images that are stereotypic, that are racist,
absolutely.
That are sexist,
mm-hmm.
that are homophobic,
yep.
that are any of those things. You don't have to sit back and allow that to happen. And when I see people doing that and just blindly going to, you know, a Django as opposed to coming to see your play, to me, I'm scratching my head.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I can't understand that. I can't understand that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There should be no need for you financially in terms of this play. There should be no need. We have enough people with revenues, with monies, who can back your play, who can back Kim's novel, who can back anything that we have. We have enough money out there.
Mm-hmm.
So we just have to start looking at things and start saying, do we want to promote healing in this country? Do we want to promote positive images in this country? And we need to really start putting our money where our mouths are. So African American History Month for me is the time that I get on my little podium and tell people, okay, we have to start taking personal responsibility. Because people, racist people say, no, you're going to these things. They only put it out in your neighborhood because they know you will go to it.
Right.
They know you will go
exactly.
to it. But why? Because mm-hmm. you've been brainwashed to go to it. And then to justify it. And that's what's amazing to me. Because no other group will support a movie that's making a Holocaust comical. There's no other group that would do that. No other group
right.
would do that. And Quentin Tarantino mm-hmm. would not make a movie about a Holocaust with any other group and make it into a comedy. I guarantee you he would never do that.
Yeah.
He would never do that. Because he knows he would be literally crucified and financially stripped. He would never do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm telling people, let's start thinking. And it's not about blaming him. He has the creative right to do whatever he wants to do. But we also have the right to say that we draw a line as to what we will entertain. I don't want to shut him down. That's not my purpose. But I'm saying to us, is that supportive of who you are? If it's supportive of who you are, then by means go see a movie like that. But if it is not,
right.
start thinking about it. Ladies, the show is about to wrap up. So last words. We have 90 seconds.
This has been fabulous.
Well, I've enjoyed
Thank
my
you
say.
So much. What a great conversation. Thank you
Absolutely.
Very much.
You're very welcome. Well, Kim, give us your information again, your contact information.
HallucinationTheNovel.com, and I encourage everyone to join Hallucination Nation, which is where you can do that when you get on the website, HallucinationTheNovel.com. Thank you very much.
Okay, Jacqueline?
And it's 678-427-3882. You can call that number, or you can go to www.brownbagproductions.com. com and add comments. jchesterga@yahoo.com is the email address. And I would welcome any and all comments. That would be so terrific. I've really enjoyed our time together tonight. Thank you so much.
I am so honored to have had the two of you on my show. You're just both absolutely phenomenal women, and you're just wonderful, wonderful role models. And thank you. And listening audience, until next time, have a wonderful week. And next week we will have two phenomenal artists as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Disappointment from my mental, physical, spiritual, and emotional body. 'Cause I know that spirit guides me and love lives inside me. That's why today I take life as it